There are so many amazing free plugins available for download right now to help you with your production and mixing. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/plugins to download and get access to a bunch of free and premium plugins on Plugin Boutique. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is Ludwig Liu.
I'm not going to lie. Ludwig's kind of a nice, classy name.
So
I'm not going to lie.
I've been studying a lot of YouTubers and building a lot of case studies, and Ludwig is the one that I've been studying the most recently.
Who the hell is Ludwig?
He's a streamer and a YouTuber. He got signed to YouTube, so he's not allowed to stream on Twitch anymore. And I think he still holds the record for the most amount of Twitch subscribers ever, because he did a 31-day subathon. So he was live streaming for 31 days straight, and he's famous for that. Makes a bunch of content on YouTube now.
What caused him to go 31 days straight? Like, what was the criteria?
Every time someone subbed or donated money, it would increase the timer.
By how much?
Like, I don't know. I don't know.
31 days. Like, if it was small amounts, like let's say 5 minutes, that's a lot.
But also, I think people thought of the drum kit when I said Ludwig too. So I'm just saying that is probably the YouTuber streamer that I was thinking about when I said that. But let's get into today's episode. Is very, very important, and I think very, very good. We were brainstorming for a while live on stream here. We are streaming. If you go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/live, you can go to my Twitch stream where we're live stream the recording of the podcast every single week. Subscribe to me on YouTube, youtube.com/DKMixes or mixingmusicpodcast/YouTube. Yeah, whatever. There's so many different ways to link
to mixingmusicpodcast.com.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. So go check it out. Anyway, today's topic, you already read the thumbnail or the title, is what they don't teach you at music school. So I want to briefly touch on what kind of schools that we went to, because Lou and we've talked about schooling many times, and sometimes very heated. Actually, most of the time it got very heated in a good way. But I'm now recognizing that we went to very different schools. Lou went to more of a trade school that offered a certificate rather than a bachelor's or a associates.
Yeah.
Where I went to school for 5 years and dropped out after 5 years on the path, like one semester away from a bachelor's for fine arts in music. And so very different career paths, very different sets of teachers and curriculum. Like, and for example, apparently Lou learned about taxes and how to set up an LLC, which is unfathomable for most music students in regular university. So it's very interesting. Trade school versus university. And I think with both of us together, we're going to be able to talk about, generalize into most music schools, especially for producing and engineering.
Fun fact about that class. It was taught by somebody who owns a Foley studio.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Cool. The person teaching us taxes was an active studio owner, which was really cool about that school.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
All right. We have a list that we kind of brainstormed before we started recording, but number one I wrote down is communication. Lou, do you want to – what kind of a communication did your school not teach you? Or just school, you feel that schools in general don't teach as well?
So schools will often make an emphasis about kind of expectations in our industry as far as what we are expected to do and how we're supposed to perform and blah, blah. But they never actually fully teach you how to execute on set expectations, one of those being communication. They don't really talk about when you actually talk about project starts, like they'll tell you try to make sure you understand what how much money is involved, this and that, blah, blah. But they never actually teach you how to set proper expectations as far as like, hey, what are the deadlines? How do you want to send me the files? How do we actually get an agreement going? Let's say you want 1 point on the masters. They didn't teach about going through song trust and all that kind of stuff. They didn't teach you how to deal with communicating with the lawyer as far as your involvement on projects. There was a lot of communication, like, I guess, lack of communication education. When they send you out, you never actually had to practice or do like mock interviews with the client, mock interviews with the label and things like that. They never actually taught you how to actually execute on a verbal level, signing a deal or agreeing to terms with a different production team as an engineer, as a producer, as an artist. They just taught you what that those terms might be, but they never taught you how to negotiate. They never taught you how to really open your mouth and communicate.
Yeah, and I think this goes into point number two, which is about etiquette. Real world etiquette in the studio and in a professional, how communication works in a studio, especially based on like as an intern or anything like that. As an engineer sitting in the chair, how you communicate with celebrities or with the producers in the room. Those type of like actual practical meta communication skills, not just skills, but like practical forms of communication, necessary forms of communication. Yeah, it's just tough. It's tough to do that because you have to keep it general enough in school. Yeah. I think everything that we talk about, if we talk about any sort of failings that school has, I don't think it's because of teachers or curriculum. I think it's because the failings of having to teach such a general topic to multiple students rather than a one-for-one lesson. So, like, if you do lessons with me and Lou, we're going to cater that lesson for you and exactly how to do it. We're going to be able to talk about all this stuff.
We don't have to worry about everybody else catching on.
Exactly. Yeah. But with school, you have to generalize a little bit, and I think that's the boon of these schools. So anyway, communicating and in real world practical ways, I think is very difficult. Etiquette. Do you want to say anything else about etiquette?
Yeah. DK, do you want to say what the end result of my celebrity training was when we first opened the studio?
End results of like you get fired if you don't follow them.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is that what you were pushing for?
Yeah, pretty much. It's kind of funny because when you're in school, they talk about like the importance of being a professional and communicating and blah, blah. But another thing is, they really don't teach you how to not fan out and how to act, how to move in a session. Like, you got hired for your first big session. Let's run through step by step, which you should do. If you're feeling overwhelmed and you think, oh, crap, I got to make sure everything's perfect, you should have a checklist. You should have this. You should have that. They don't really teach you how to deal with high-stakes situations or how to communicate and make, I guess, what would seem like a tougher session a simpler one. They don't teach you about efficiency. With that said, honestly speaking, studio etiquette is something that you have to learn on the spot. It's not something that you can learn in a textbook. It's not something that you can communicate. If I read you a math problem but never showed it to you or never had you do it yourself, you'd never get it. It doesn't matter what you're learning, but etiquette is one of those that have to be done in the wild.
Yeah, and etiquette, there's a t-shirt that I have that I bought from, or no, that was given to me in NAMM 2020. Mm-hmm. It was like the 10 rules of etiquette for interns.
We did an episode about this.
Yeah, so I want you to, if you're interested in learning more about this, there's an episode of the podcast that's called How Not to Get Fired as an Intern. And that is it's a required listening for anybody that wants to intern at our studio. It's a very good episode about etiquette, so definitely recommend looking into that.
I also recommend taking the Ian Bell path. DK and I only have so many Lou names, and Ian Bell, as part of his interview process, also handed DK a list of Lou names. One of them is my favorite of all time, which is Lou Lord of the Wielder of Swords and Lord of the Boards.
There it is.
Yeah, solid. Good interview tactic. Find something funny to put on your resume.
Number three is a general sense of business. So it seems like Lou and I, this is where we kind of differentiate, and we're going to have varying levels of business. So like Lou had some freelance help because it's a trade school, which would make sense, right?
Yep.
Versus mine had a very different level of business teaching because it was a Bachelor of Fine Arts. It was a BA for music. So it was like they were teaching mostly theory and how to be a performer. People that ended up becoming professional performers. I have a friend that's a professional pianist out in Europe.
Really?
Yeah, like really killer piano player. And like Yeah, he probably didn't wasn't ever taught how to get a manager, find contacts, or how to get, land gigs in Europe in school. But business in general, we're talking about, especially as a freelancer, so things like how to track your finances and prepare end-of-year reports for your CPA, what a CPA is, and how to get your taxes done, and potentially pay taxes during the year so you don't have to pay it all at the end of the year, how to set up an articles of organization and set up an LLC in your state, and how if you live in California, you should do everything in your fucking power to not set up a business in California. Talk to your cousins, talk to your neighbors, anywhere else. You set up your business anywhere outside of California. You just operate in California, but you do not. Oh my gosh. I am convinced.
Just do sole proprietorship in California.
I'm convinced, like after doing business now in California, I'm convinced that the California Franchise Tax Board is a fucking scam. Like they're a scam. They're scammers. I'm convinced. We've paid everything on time. We've even double paid them ahead of time. And oh, they take our money and say we haven't paid, and we still owe them a late fee, even though we paid
on time.
I am convinced that they're scammers. Like, oh my gosh. I hate, do not set up a business in LA.
Moral of the story?
Don't set up a business in LA. No in LA. Nope. Nothing in LA. Don't do it. I'm convinced it's a scam. And California's the only state that does that. California is the only state that has a franchise tax board. This is the most bullshit I've ever.
I wonder if I set up shop in a state that has a no sales tax, if I can abide by that one too.
So LaunchPod Media is technically organized in Delaware. Mm-hmm. Was it Delaware? I think that's the main startup.
Tax?
That's no. It's the main startup. So there's the least amount of tax if you sell the business.
Oh.
So it's a lot of people do that for businesses when they tend to sell. So look up city things like that. Anyway, the point is schools don't teach you things like that.
Nope.
And we could talk about business in that sense, how to do taxes, finances,
on to the next
books. Yeah, just general business. The number four is like branding, reputation, marketing, and how to continue to build your reputation. This can go into a little bit of marketing or networking as well.
Yeah.
They don't even mention I don't think my teachers even mentioned the importance of building a reputation. And like, I think it starts off at like the importance of having integrity and being seen as someone that's trustworthy and good at your job.
Which should come by default in your nature.
I think it's common sense. Maybe that's not why it's taught. But like, it's common sense, but it's so much more important that I think that there should be a focus of emphasis.
Yeah.
Emphasis in that school. Number five is culture.
Mm-hmm.
Modern culture. For example, this is a classic one. Hip-hop has been the biggest and most highest income genre of music since 2017. Tracked since 2017. My teacher in 2020 was convinced that hip-hop was not worth studying and not really get into, and actually kind of shit-talked hip-hop multiple times over, not just during class, but openly on Facebook as well and different things. That's a very specific example. It's hard. Yeah. Sometimes people get the blinders on. Some teachers get the blinders on because unfortunately, and this is a thing. I don't think every teacher's like this, and some teachers go out of their way to make sure that this does not happen. But the stereotype, which happens to be true oftentimes, is that teachers have been teaching now for 20 plus years, has been out of the industry for almost a decade or more, out of an industry that changes every single day. Not just techniques, but how labels work and run and operate. Like, for example, TikTok and how labels own Spotify now and do like playlisting thing. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a thing a few years ago.
Yeah.
And there's no way that like you have to like actively keep up with that sort of stuff. Man, it's just annoying. Just make sure that they don't teach you up-to-date culture in school, which is unfortunate. Some teachers are actually still currently working in the field. Like, it sounds like you had a few teachers that were actively working.
Actually, when I chose, so to make it quick, when I chose the school and I interviewed, I literally went to a ton of open houses. I took Anna with me to almost every single one. Ask her how annoying the process was. It was annoying. But I purposely chose my school because everybody there was an active engineer or producer or artist. I remember one of my teachers that I first met was Demi Lovato's personal engineer. And since at the time she was only working at night, he would only teach in the morning. So he actively was doing it, but he also had a family with three kids. So he was making sure bills were paid and consistent. And he told everybody, he's like, my plan is to not teach after 5 years. He said, this isn't my long-term thing. The student aides that were there were, they weren't full-time teachers, but they were there to be like studio aides and all that kind of stuff, inventory, whatever, blah, blah, blah. They were all also like working for like Aftermath. They were working for Paramount. They were all engineers somewhere, but they just had their time for consistent pay and they were teaching on the side. And that was what really attracted me to SA. I'm not going to lie. The number one thing that attracted me to that school was that everybody there was active in LA. But that's a much easier find in LA. This is not as easy a find if you're – we spoke about Delaware earlier. If you're studying in Delaware, I highly doubt one of your active teachers is an engineer for Aftermath. I highly doubt Demi Lovato is booking them every weekend. Why? Because she's not in fucking Delaware.
Yeah.
I was in Los Angeles. I had an opportunity to learn from people who are active because it's very easy to stay active as a teacher in Los Angeles.
So the point of this is that just be aware, even if you don't have an actively working industry professor, just be aware that take everything with a grain of salt and understand that if you really like video games, like for example... When we were growing up, we were told that video games were a waste of time and nobody would ever make money from them.
That you know how many times it was taken away from me?
That wasn't even like a concept. Like making money from video games wasn't even an argument to be made because it was just that it was a waste of time. It was just a form of entertainment.
Yeah.
Now, shut up. Like esports is like the most important and profitable things ever. So like it's just take things with a grain of salt and recognize that if you recognize that there's a movement going on in the culture that you want to move with, then take it with a grain of salt. Anyway, other career paths. For example, this is where I think mine would come in. Mm-hmm. I graduated in commercial music. I would have graduated in a BA with a BA in commercial music. And I had to do theory core, music history. I had to learn opera scores and do like notation and piano, blah, blah, blah. So many things that had nothing to do with what I wanted to do. That was part of it. And did they ever teach me about there was like one or two classes. The point of those, and the professor did a really good job trying to explore as many different careers within the field as possible. So 1 week we're assigned to do Foley work.
Mm-hmm.
As homework. 1 week we're assigned to do a film score mm-hmm. for like 5 minutes of film. One mm-hmm. week we're remix a song that already had vocals and guitar and like it out. 1 week we're supposed to do like a copy. So like.
Sounds like you had pretty busy schedule.
Yeah. And 1 week we were supposed to do like a copy. So it's like we were supposed to make a new song, but that sounded really similar to this song. So we wouldn't get copyright struck.
One professor or the general
professor?
This
is professors? One class. This is one class.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and we had to do another one was like a 30-second donut for like a TV or radio commercial, mm-hmm. Things of that nature. So it was like we explored. Actually, that was one class though. But I think that was a very special situation. I think some schools may not do as good of a job exploring other career paths. Dave Pensado on Pensado's Place talks about this all the time. There are actually so many different careers within the world of audio, and people think that there's not enough jobs in the world of audio, but there are. I was talking to Shaq, who's Bob's assistant. He mm-hmm. said that a sound effects editor can be making more than $50 an hour with benefits.
Yeah.
On film and TV. So you're making like, and it's full-time hours. So you're making 100K plus benefits. And it's like really nice benefits.
But you might not enjoy your job.
Yeah, but it's boring compared to music. So like there's many, so many different opportunities to go down, but I feel like that might be missed in many schools.
Yeah. No joke. One of my old teachers basically opened my eyes to the world of vocal tuning as a full-time job. Which introduced me to like other people. I started following other people. Like I think her name is Natty Turner in Miami, where she's a multi Grammy award winning vocal tuner. That's all she does. All she's known for. Well, I'm sure she's known for more, but as far as I'm personally aware of, like all she does is get hired for major project vocal tunings. They just send her the session, say tune these vocals. She sends them back and that's the end of her job.
Yeah. That's crazy. And there's so much more, right? And that's really, again, that's, I think that's more to, because of something that's lost because of the format of schooling, its general audience. I will say that's more lost, less more in traditional music schools of music. Sometimes you're lucky, like Noah Avery, who's in the chat, said a little earlier that he got a BA in commercial music, but it was basically a jazz degree. And I could argue the same way. Only half of my degree was actually about engineering, and only half of that was actually about the type of engineering that I was interested in.
Yeah.
So it's really tough to do. Last thing, this goes directly into the next thing, which is if you do go to a non-trade school, but a traditional school of music, most of the time, as part of the school of music and to be recognized as a school of music, there are federal requirements that the school has to hit, including like teaching theory and teaching music history. There's things that you have to. So it's going to feel like if you do not a non-trade school like SAE. SAE is a trade school, sorry, non-trade school like what a traditional university, then a lot of that is going to be based off of performance. For example, not only I wanted to be an engineer, but I had to do an emphasis on an instrument. So I could not get accepted to the school. I had to get accepted to the School of Music and get accepted to my program, which is a less than 1% acceptance rate. It's the hardest program to get into in the school ever, by not even close. And then the second hardest school to get into, which is like nursing, only had a 50%, or advertising had like a 50% acceptance rate. Yeah. So it's totally different. And because of that, because it's part of the School of Music, and I was registered as a singer, I had to take a lot of singing classes, and it sometimes felt like I was graduating and learning how to be a singer and not an engineer, and that got annoying. So
I mean, you got to become a good singer.
But specifically with singing, like,
I'd like to know how to sing better.
Just I'll sing more. I'll tell you to sing more and gig more. That's how you get better. All right. Oof. And anyway, sometimes it feels like they're teaching you how to be a performer more than an engineer or a producer. So keep that in mind. Like, we were talking about how, like, in a good semester, for me, in a good semester, I don't know about you, but for a good semester, with all my classes to combine, like 14 out of minimum 12 credits to be full-time, if like 14 to 16 credits, 12 to 16 credits, you'd work on maybe 12 songs or projects in a semester.
Semester being what, a quarter? 3 months?
Yeah, like 3 months. So, like, in a semester, you work maybe on 10 to 15 songs max.
Yeah.
And think about that. Like, me working on 12 to 15 songs, that is less than a month. Yeah. That is potentially 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, that you're not going to get the proper amount of experience with schooling, too. And the common complaint that I heard in my school, and I don't think this is in any sense. By the way, I went to BYU, which is in Utah, and is actually rated the number one most value price for education for music.
Bang for your buck.
So bang for your buck. Music degrees, BYU is number one in the entire country, according to a few different places. I think Forbes was actually one of them. They did a study.
Nice.
Number one value for education in music. Anyway, it was really interesting. So this is, I lost my train of thought.
No.
I was talking about, school. Oh yeah, the number one complaint, and I don't think this is on BYU or like on this university. I think it's just a general thing. Like, every student was like, I wish I had more time to actually work on music. And that was the biggest thing. It's like, when you're going to school, it sometimes may not feel like you're actually getting the time to work on music, which
actually
is unfortunate.
That's actually a pretty big deal. I don't know if this is still a major issue. I'd imagine so, with the increasing count of student bodies in most schools, as like some schools shut down, and because of that, other schools expanded and increased their student body size. But they didn't increase the number of studios. So part of it is actual practical experience working on whatever system you're learning to work on. If you want to learn on a console, you can learn on a console, whatever. The reality is, I think even our interns that have been with us for a month that actually utilize the resources that we provide for them probably have more hours in the studio than a complete semester student at any school, because lab hours are usually pretty sparse and rarely available for longer sessions. I was talking to a friend of mine who said at the school that he went to here in Hollywood, huge school, they offer a master's in music technology. They gave people a maximum bookability in advance of 2 hours. And if there was time before or after available the day of, you could take that time. because there were so many students in the actual school program that they could only allocate a maximum of 2 hours per day, 2 sessions per week.
Yeah, so I think that's where it's going to vary based on schools. But for me, we had no issues. In fact, I would say now I consider that a blessing. Like, we had one big studio that was actually connected to the auditorium. So, like, we would record every single, like, jazz, like, touring musician that actually played on campus or whatever. Tower of Power came through a lot.
Actually, Tower of Power is hell.
Tower of Power came through a lot. Yeah, that's good. At BYU. That was, like, one of the number one acts at BYU.
Man.
We had a lot of big... Actually, BYU had a lot of big music acts. I'm not going to lie to you.
What is Hip is probably the song I would want to see them play
live.
Oh,
yeah, of course. That's
what is Hip?
One. Yeah, but that's a fun one. But that's a lot. And then what else? We had like a medium-sized one, and then we had a bunch of production suites, which were smaller, but had a bunch of like VIs, virtual instruments loaded up for like composers and whatnot.
Dual computer setup?
Not just single computer setup, but they were like stacked. And it was great. And that was one of the things. So I think we were blessed with that. So something to consider as well. Granted, our commercial music was only about 30 to 50 students at any given time.
Okay.
So like total for like all freshmen to senior to like whatever. Next one is like we wrote down file management, but I'm going to say like small practical meta skills.
Yeah, systemization is probably the number one project thing that they don't teach.
Yeah, project management, file management.
Actually, you know, going not to backtrack, but going back to the like I guess business classes and all that, systemization, it leads into both, but like, you know, if file management, but like, let's say setting up
a
MailChimp
account. MailChimp.
Yeah, how to collect emails on your website, how to do quotes and all that. But literally.
And that's not something that a school should teach you. That's something that you're going to have to learn on your own.
But it's something that's actually kind of good where it's like, hey, guys, like they always teach about the 10,000. They always bring up the 10,000 hours of practice, but they never talk about, yo, like, to maximize that, let's minimize the redundancies in what we have to do to continue running a business.
So if I were to teach, by the way, I would love, if I were to teach a class at school as an adjunct professor, it would be music business. Especially for freelancers, because we talk about, okay, how are you going to build an audience? And we got these sort of things. And I'm going to the homework would be based on like, okay, go and start a mailing list and create an email list and show it to us.
That actually would be dope.
Things like that, like, anyway,
I actually learned that on the job with Westlake.
There you go. There you go. Next one is modern techniques. We kind of went over how teachers and curriculums can be out of date. So just be aware, modern techniques. It's just really hard for schools to teach you. That's not at the fault of the school. That's just how one of the things of the system, the faults of the system. Internships are super duper important. Trade schools are going to be way better for this, though.
Yeah, that's why I'm going to be honest. I purposely chose a trade school over any university or anything that I was finding for two major reasons. One of them was price. I was financing everything myself without any financial aid or anything. So I had to be weary of any kind of cost issues that I would run into. Secondly, that also meant that I needed to get as much as I could within a certain budget before I went broke over my education and not over my career. You know, I wasn't trying to tail that too long, but trade schools are really, really good if you're looking for like modern production techniques, especially if you're in a busy city. If you're in any major city, there's usually a music scene. Like Chicago has a music scene. Seattle actually has a music scene. It's not very big, but it's existent. Even Vegas has a music scene. I mean, it's entertainment. But if you're looking to get some more modern production based education, definitely a trade school. Or honestly speaking, there, if you're not looking for a specific piece of paper, go to a private small school that is actually like recently opened by other professionals in the industry. One that I would like to shout out is Create Music Academy, which is Doug, who is one of the head engineers at Westlake Studios. Alex Flores, I believe, works with them and everything. But, you know, these people are the same people that are like producing and recording records for like Jamie Foxx, 1500 and Nothing and all them. You know, it's a school run and taught by these people. 1500 and Nothing have their own music production school. Not saying that they're amazing like BYU or SAE or by those standards, but by their own standards, if you're looking for modern production, look for those guys.
Yeah.
Don't look at, Pasadena City College.
So the next one, the next point is a tough one. I'm a big believer of the importance of hope. And the next one is a really, really tough one because...
Perseverance?
For example, one of Ludwig's streams, he talked about...
Me.
He talked about, yeah.
Yeah.
He talked about how, what you can do, things that I learned of how to become a big Twitch streamer. Mm-hmm. And his point number two was, if you want to be a big streamer, and he pulled up a slideshow, and the one word, there's one word on that slide, and it said, quit, because you are statistically unlikely ever going to make it.
Good.
And I don't like that concept, because it just removes all hope that you can make it. And again, with the whole Dave Pensado thing, there are so many different, there's so many different ways for you to make money from audio in the industry. There's so many, but the truth is, for many things, like to be paid well as a mixer, there's a proper struggle.
Yeah.
And at no point does anybody ever have it easy.
Nope.
And, it's important to recognize that. Yeah. Like Full Sail's success rate is like job landing rate out of
it's
colleges.
It's under 1%.
It's crazy. And like,
it's under 1%.
Of
actual jobs, because they did so back when I was researching schools, Full Sail had like 3 active lawsuits against them for that statistic that they were promoting. They were promoting that like a high percentage of theirs actually get a job, but it was like getting a job at Guitar Center that they were qualifying. What qualifies as an actual job, they were also qualifying internships. I'm just saying, like, Full Sail immediately went out the window when I saw that. Not saying that it's a bad school. It's actually a really good school. It's just, don't go off of their placing odds when choosing a school.
Yeah, so, just real time, there are many, many jobs, but you might have to either pivot laterally into, like, film and TV when you were trying to do music, or go into games or some things. I would say go in the direction. There's so many opportunities, but it is actually really, really hard. The music industry is very, very small, much smaller than film and TV. There's very little budgets, especially at the beginning. So just be aware that it is difficult, and schools don't really teach you that, nor do I think schools should. No. I don't think schools should teach you that. You're very unlikely to get a job out of this. I wish schools did emphasize that. And the reason why I think they should emphasize business more is because it sounds like they did at your school, but at my school, they did not emphasize how important it's going to be to learn how to be an entrepreneur, because most jobs are going to be through freelance.
Yeah.
Staff engineer at a studio is going to be much more difficult than freelancing. Yeah. And you're going to have to freelance in order to build a resume to get onto a staff position.
Yeah.
So, like, I wish they emphasized that you're going to be an entrepreneur and a freelancer, probably.
Yeah, if you're going to pay crazy amounts of money for education, do what they're prepping you to do. If they're prepping you to be interviewed and get a job somewhere else, interview them for the job that you're paying them to do, which is educate you properly. Literally speaking, once again, the main reason I chose my school is because it was ran and taught by people who were active in the industry, which is huge. And because of that, they made a big stink of everything that really does make a difference, things that really do help you out. But not many schools are going to help you out with this. Like if you see DK teaching as an adjunct teacher, take that class, because music business is extremely important. If you want to know what the job of a manager is while you're taking classes out of school, chances are they're not going to teach you what a manager actually does, just the technical side of the job. But when you actually talk to managers in our music industry, they are looking at it from a whole different looking glass. So honestly, if you're in an education system right now, take an internship while you're in school. You might think you don't have enough time, but internships doesn't mean 20 hours a day.
Internships are probably one of the most valuable applications in conjunction with a formal education.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to go to school, also have an internship. Like I said, one, if your school doesn't offer a lot of lab hours, internship.
Even if your school, like, for example, a lot of trade schools do not require an internship. Even so, you should use, and specifically use, the connections of your professors and of your school to get as good of an internship as possible. That was the one thing with most universities, require internship credits in order to graduate, and people keep picking low-hanging fruit for their internship, the local studio that's not that big, that somehow is accepted by the board. If you're not in LA, go get an internship in LA or in Nashville, in New York. Go get shoot for the stars with the internship, because that's going to be your biggest form of practical application education during your school year. And most universities offer scholarships or funding specifically for those internships.
Yeah.
I went to Mix with the Masters in France for free for a week and got internship credit for it for free because the school paid for it. There's an experimental learning fund that the school has and totally passed through, and I wrote a report and it was paid for totally for free. And so those classic universities do have scholarships, so talk to your counselors and professors and get as good of an internship as possible, which leads us to our last point that we're going to get to is networking. I mean, people talk about networking, but especially if you're not in a big music city. I wish they taught us more and they forced us even for school credits and point to do internships or to leave and go to music cities. Go to LA, go to Nashville, go to New York.
Go to NAMM.
Go to NAMM. Well, most universities will actually, the professor or somebody will go to NAMM. Make sure you go with them. Go with them. Even if it costs money, go with them.
Even if their career is in the past, doesn't mean their connection's left.
Yeah. Networking. Use your professor and various other students' connections to increase your own circle. And also become friends with every other student, too. I make a lot of money from my former classmates.
Yeah.
We give each other gigs because one of them is a producer. I give him production work and he gives me mixing work. It's sort of film score, whatever. We hang out all the time. We talk all the time. We've given each other money. So it's network with your fellow students, but go to outside of your small town in Nebraska and go to fucking LA, Nashville, and have that be part of your curriculum or your internship or whatever way. And if you can get school to pay for it, great.
If not, go anyways.
Yeah, so that's the last thing, networking. And I think like Berkeley does a good job with this because usually there's like a tradition from what I understand. After you graduate Berkeley, everybody kind of migrates to Nashville, to New York, Nashville. And they're in the East Coast. And then to LA, so they kind of migrate. Bob Horn did that as well. I've heard a lot of Berkeley cats do that. They all kind of migrate to LA.
Yeah, it's the Berkeley exit method.
Yes.
Yeah.
So on that note, I think that's the final point of the episode of the podcast. Any other kind of thoughts that you had as we kind of went over?
Honestly, everybody knows this. I'm a big backer of traditional education, but it's at the end of the day, very case by case. Everybody learns a different way and actually has a different need as far as their education style. I'm a very hands-on person, so I chose my school based on what was going to work best for the way I learn and not for the way that the school intends me to learn. Reason being is, dude, I have ADHD. You know how bad it is. And you see how active, like, physically I am with, like, hey, if I can improve something, I'm going to do it. But not every school teaches the same way, so everybody's case is going to be very different. Everybody's experience in the education system is going to be very different. But there's one constant, which is there's no replacement for actual real-world experience. It's really not going to be something you learn in school. And if you're ever looking for ways to improve your education, YouTube University is another great one, but it's still not experience. Just go out, get an internship, whether you're in a traditional school, a trade school, whether you're not in school, go get an internship. You wouldn't believe how fast some of our interns have progressed. Like, we've got interns that, you know, came in, actually Henry is a great example of this. He came in not knowing Pro Tools at all, and now he's the head producer for a production label in North Hollywood, which is really cool. Like, he wasn't very confident at first with it, and now he's like taking on sessions. He's boasting about, like, he's like, dude, a year ago, like, I could not walk into a room with people that I didn't know and lead a session. That's not something that's going to happen right at graduation from a traditional school. It's only something that you can learn from being around sessions, seeing how they move. They're not going to teach you how to do I guess you could say difficult situation kind of troubleshooting or moving through a difficult situation. Not always is the client going to be super pleasant, or is there going to be the computer that works perfectly through the whole session and now suddenly, you know, something happens and you don't know how to react. You don't know how to communicate. Hey, let me fix this real quick. Real world experience is the number one teacher.
Absolutely. I also learned this episode that trade schools is probably, if you don't care for a degree, which is important to think about.
Yeah.
Because some people, like, you do want a degree.
Yeah, if you want a technical job in the later life, get a degree.
Yeah, and it's good to be safe with a degree. Mm-hmm. Because I know a lot of people that graduated in commercial music and then went on to be something totally different.
Yeah.
They actually went on to be a nurse or a doctor.
Or they got a government job.
Yeah, there you go. So, like, things like that. So it's okay because you can always fall back on your degree to actually get, I mean, if you have a degree, you never have to get a minimum job ever again if something happens, right? Which is a great thing. But if you are looking and if you're really, really committed to the idea of just being an engineer and you really want to be taught specific real world, most modern applications ever, it sounds like trade school is it for many, many people. So recognize that there's a couple different options. I always just assumed that, oh man, I didn't realize yours was a trade school until now. I knew that our schooling was very different, but I didn't realize that. So yeah, so I did like a 5-year thing. He did like a 2-year thing, and his was more focused and probably Lou learned more about audio engineering than I did in 5 years, and more than double the amount of time. Lou probably learned more specifically about engineering than I did, which is interesting.
It was, like I said, I spent a lot of time choosing my school.
Yeah, so do that. And the main difference is, I think, is a trade school versus a university.
With that said, do I recommend SAE? No.
So look into trade schools, not whatever is around you. And availability and what's closest to you is actual good reasons to pick one. So don't. And then also shoot big, dude. Shoot big. I don't know if it's worth going into debt for some schools, but it's a good idea to interview and talk to not just the school and the professors, but also alumni.
Yeah.
Ask people who went to there. So for me, luckily, I went out totally debt free, and it was great. So
yeah, I heard about the school, about somebody who was going to the school, and I asked him, like, honestly speaking, like, how did you feel about choosing the school? And his exact words were, "I don't like the curriculum as much as I like the teachers," which was a huge note to know. So like, ask the students, like, what do you like? What do you not like?
Yeah. So that's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing. Is it worth going to school? I think if for me in my situation, I got out debt-free. If you can go to school for free or very, very cheap and debt-free and you are young, fucking do it. Is it worth going into major debt for?
No.
Like $100,000 into debt for?
Oh, well. Once again, depends on your focus.
It
depends on your focus.
Decision.
You want to be the guy that designs consoles for a living? I kid you not, there's a lot of money in live sound consoles.
We talked to there's a special episode that may have already come out, or no, it will come out in the future after this podcast comes out.
Mm-hmm.
We did an episode with True Peak Hour.
Yeah.
And Crystal did graduate school in New York.
Yeah.
And she said that undergrad is not worth it. Graduate school for audio is fucking worth it.
Yeah.
So something to consider as well. Maybe we should have her back on the show and talk specifically about that, because that's very interesting.
Yeah.
That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. This episode is sponsored and brought to you by our exclusive episodes. If you like the Mixing Music Podcast and want to hear 3 times the amount of episodes, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive for $4 a month or $40 a year. You can get 2 more episodes every single week that are 100% technical skill based. It's really, really great. It's less than the cost of 1 coffee per month. And it's so much more education. We have so many people on the list right now that I'm probably going to shout out next episode. But it's really, really great. We really appreciate anybody that does that. Also, what else? Subscribe to me on YouTube. Go watch Lou mix and do things live on Twitch at twitch.tv/masterbylou. Come to my Mix Feedback Friday every Friday morning at 10 a.m. PST, twitch.tv/DKMixes. We do a lot of different stuff. Just go to mixingmusicpodcast.com. You'll discover all of it. All right. So on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. We have a lot of videos of the podcast and various other tutorials on YouTube. You can subscribe to our channel at mixingmusicpodcast.com/YouTube. Happy mixing and enjoy the show.